Welcome to Beyond the OR with Dr. Kevin Brenner. I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills. I want to take you beyond my world of plastic surgery, diving deep into exciting hot topics and delving even deeper into compelling characters that I've met along the way. We'll be talking with attorneys, actors, comedy writers, Navy SEALs, and many other fascinating and inspiring people with truly intriguing stories to share. So let's jump right in. Welcome back to Beyond the OR. Today, I'm really, really excited to have with us Mr. Johnny Raines, producer, casting director, executive, longtime friend of mine, most importantly. And today, we're going to learn all about his origin story. And you probably know Johnny, not by name, but from behind the scenes, because he's worked on so many shows that you are just household names, like The Bachelor and Bachelorette and Super Nanny.
Wife Swap.
We're going to learn all about it. So, yes. Johnny.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Welcome, Johnny.
Great to be here.
Yay!
Oh, my God.
I love seeing you. Every time I see you, it's like it brings back my childhood.
Oh,
so just so for everyone listening and watching, I've known you since I was in grammar school.
Yeah,
right.
We were pretty young.
So Johnny has
10 years ago.
Right.
Yes. 10 years ago. So Johnny is friends with my brother.
Yes, one of my dearest friends.
And when did you guys meet?
So your brother Greg and I first met in high school, pretty much my first day at Beverly Hills High School.
Okay, yes. So it was when I was in junior high.
Yeah.
Okay.
10 years ago, as you said.
Yes, 10 years ago.
And before we even finish that thought, the first backlash I'm going to get is from my brother.
Uh-oh.
As soon as he sees you and hears you sitting here,
yes.
I don't know if he'll call you before calling me.
Like, why are you hanging out with my friend?
Right.
Like, you haven't had me on your show.
Oh, well.
You had Johnny on this show.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean,
hey,
I can
priorities.
Understand why.
And family.
No, your brother will be a great guest because your brother is, I mean, he's so funny. He's one of the funniest people that I know. And I see so much resemblance between the two of you.
But not as funny as me.
Well,
I say that to him.
You both have definitely the
dry humor.
Yeah, I was going to say the comedian gene, which I think you get from your mother, who was also kind of like a big personality.
Yeah, I knew my mom.
Of course,
oh,
I knew your mom.
Oh, that's amazing.
He was like around the house on the weekends along with Keith and David and like the rat pack. That was like my brother. You guys were my brother's rat pack.
Yeah.
And I was always so jealous of your relationship, the four of you, because you're all still friends today.
Yes, absolutely.
Which you know.
And that's why he had you instead of his brother, because he was jealous.
So now we have our own thing, right? As we become adults yes.
And I'm sure Keith and David want no part of this.
Well, so. You know, they may be knocking on your door to get on the show next.
Doubtful. So I was jealous of that. And in fact, last night, it was oddly enough, I was at an event. So my younger daughter is starting a new school. So they had like a new parents event.
Right.
And as Danny and I walked in, the first person I see is my friend Jason from grammar school.
Amazing.
I went to Beverly Vista with him.
That's great.
He's a big time manager. Yeah. Was an agent, and I haven't seen him in years.
LA is
and
a
now,
small
and
town.
Now our kids are gonna be in the same class, which is, oh my God, I'm having Johnny. I was like, it's like my parallel, but like I don't have what Greg has with you guys. Like I just don't have that because I moved around so much.
Right.
So
it's rare. It is definitely rare.
That's so beautiful though. Because I think when you have those longtime friends, there's a bond there. It's a family, really.
Yeah.
And especially in LA, everybody's so transient, you know? So you guys are unicorns, really. Like, my husband is a native.
He grew up here, too.
Yeah, he did, in the Valley.
Okay.
So you guys are unicorns, and the fact that everybody's still kind of around is amazing.
Yeah, I feel like Los Angeles, I know what you mean by saying it has this transient nature, but it is in a lot of ways to me like a very small town.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because we grew up here and like your husband grew up here, so he might have a similar feeling about it, where it's... You can't go anywhere without bumping into somebody they went to grammar school with or high school with, just like you did last night,
right,
you know?
Right.
So it does happen often when you're here in LA, which is odd because there are millions of people that live here.
That's true, but I feel like all of us who grew up here,
yeah,
right? You started at Beverly, you started in Beverly Hills School District in high school, or were you?
High school, but I went to... I went to school in L.A., like at Carthay Center before. So, I mean, I was born in Los Angeles.
But I feel like there's so many people from, like, when we were growing up who went into entertainment. Like,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
They either left permanently and never looked back, or, everyone's in entertainment.
And I think it's, like, if we lived in Indiana or Iowa, we would be going into the agriculture business. But we don't live there. We live here. So Hollywood is like, you know, what else are you going to do?
That's true. I was pretty close. I was in Wisconsin and Chicago. It's not that far. You know, it's a stone's throw from Indiana.
I'm saying, right. Had you stayed, you might be working on a corn farm. Instead of in Beverly Hills, it's like this fancy plastic surgery.
There's like a huge need for plastic surgery on the corn farm.
I mean, Cindy Crawford was discovered on a cornfield. In the Midwest.
Wow.
Yeah. You're a wealth of information.
Not just a pretty face.
all right. So how did you come from being Johnny that I knew in my house to getting into entertainment? Like what was that transition?
It was definitely not a straight line. I will tell you that. And so, you know, growing up in Los Angeles, in Beverly Hills at that particular time, as teenagers, that's when things really became crazy. So it was a fast existence in those years. So by the time I went to college, I was kind of like already ready to downshift a little bit because high school had been so racy. And so once I got into college at USC, that's where options aside from just being like cool and partying and living large, like I saw all these other options, like getting a job and studying and things that had never been part of my experience at all, ever.
Pre-med, no.
Just even like going to the library, like things that just were not part of.
Never went to the library at Beverly, huh?
Not to study.
No, I love it.
So. Make a long story short, once I got to USC, that's when I started really thinking about a career. So I was a journalism major at USC, and that is really where I started to build this foundation of how to tell stories and how to spell and things like that. Grammar.
The basics, the things you didn't learn in Beverly Hills.
Right. Imagine. So that's where those building blocks came into play. And like our experience growing up in LA, our roots to Los Angeles were very strong, or still are strong. That's what we started the conversation with. So going to a local school, which USC is, still I had all the relationships with people from high school and even further back. So I was kind of like a commuter student. So I would drive to class and go back to my regular life. So by junior year, I was ready to experience something else, so I decided to go to do a junior year abroad. That's the University of Kent.
Which is the second thing I'm jealous of, because I never I always wanted to do an abroad year. It just wasn't in the cards.
But you,
on my track.
You studied outside of LA. You were in Chicago, right?
I was in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, okay.
For college and then Chicago for med school.
Right, I remember that you were in Chicago for med school.
I'm jealous of all my friends who got to go abroad. Or chose to go abroad.
That experience that you had living in Wisconsin, living in Illinois, that's similar,
I think. Similar than to UK?
When you come from here, like, it's everywhere is different than Los Angeles, because LA is like, I mean, what I learned, by the way, when I went to school in England was that LA is not the center of the universe.
Yeah. Right.
Which you grow up thinking here. Like, you think, like, this is it. There's no place.
But there is a bubble.
The Oscars is, totally. Is the only thing that you have to look
like, forward to. Like, Oscar season is actually a holiday here. But it's not like that in other places.
Anywhere else.
No, it's just here.
Maybe Manhattan.
But we do live in a bubble in LA. You know, I even though I think we live in a bubble, what I love about Los Angeles is that, don't you feel like, even though, you know, there's the, oh, people are fake, or I find that everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But there's always, there's this thing of everybody trying to better themselves on a, you know, spiritual kind of level, or, you know, figuring out what, you know, what their path is. And so there is this always working on yourself thing that I think is really cool in
it's
LA.
Nice. Yeah,
it really is. So what did you study when you went to
University of Kent?
Yes.
In Canterbury.
Yes.
So I studied.
I'm surprised you didn't come back with an accent.
This was before Madonna had that.
and an ask off.
Yeah. I mean, believe me, when I came back, it was devastating because I loved it so much. And to finish college here at USC, which is what I, because it was my junior year, was really quite disappointing and depressing and all that. But what I studied there was philosophy, particularly European philosophy.
Ooh.
And it was also poetry, British poetry. It was kind of a divergence from the journalism program at USC, which is and is still, and at the time was very professionally driven. This year abroad was like, you know, a year out of time. So philosophy, British poetry. But the most incredible part of that year was this experience of like realization that there's more to life than what, you know, I grew up with. And the friendships that I made there also became long-term friendships whom I'm still connected with and, you know, been through weddings and divorces and godfather to some kids over there. So, but it was such a unique experience because it was at a very small university on a little hill, like in a 13th century town, where there was like, there were a lot of international students from all over the world, but our world was the university. There was no like Hollywood Boulevard or, you know, whatever we have here. None of that. So
were you embarrassed to tell people you were from Beverly Hills?
No, I was like as loud as you could imagine about it. And people were like, so what?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like nobody even cared.
But that's even better. Totally. You know, I think that's.
In Wisconsin, I got so many sneers. You know, we'd have like, I mean, it's a huge...
Why, did you go around telling everybody you were from Beverly Hills?
Well,
hello? I would be looking at them, who cares?
It's a huge university, so like all like the 100 level like intro courses, there's like 500 people in a class. But then they'd have like these little TA sessions where there's like 15 students.
Right.
And so the first class, every time they're like, okay, everyone go around and tell us your name and where you're from. You're like, hey, I'm Steve from Waukesha. Hi, I'm Bob from Kenosha. I'm Susie from Green Bay.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Kevin from Beverly Hills. Like, it was like the air got sucked out of the room and everyone.
Right.
Yeah, like who's like, this guy?
Yeah. But you have so, I mean, you're so handsome and have
oh
such.
Oh my God.
Oh, please
charisma.
Don't do that, Tommy.
It's
true. I wanted to put you on television. Like when you were in medical school, I was like trying to cultivate you, to be on
you did.
Television.
That was my first
I remember.
Foray into,
yes.
into reality TV, right?
Yes. So I'm sure.
Johnny tried, what? Are you going to tell me?
Well,
so Johnny
I was
tried
gonna
to,
say,
he tried to suck me into The Bachelor.
I mean, suck might be the wrong word.
Yes.
recruit?
Lure, perhaps, might be better. Cast me to be the
Okay, so yeah, so Johnny was a casting
Pick your
director.
Words. Oh, my God.
Johnny was a cat. Johnny was a casting director, and yeah.
Yes. For many years.
You just called me out of the blue and was like, you need to audition for The Bachelor. I'm like, no, I don't. I think I was.
You might have been a resident.
I was doing my plastic surgery residency.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I was in the LA nether regions,
right,
close by, down in Irvine, and I was like, what? And then I'll never forget. So your office at the time was at the Sherman Oaks Gallery, right?
Like totally.
And like, oh my God, gag me with a spoon. So you're like, but you have to come like screen test, right?
Yes.
Isn't that what we did?
It's an audition, yeah.
Right.
Put you on tape.
I'm just a caveman. I don't know these things. It's not my world.
Imagine how easy my job is. Right. Yeah.
So I remember coming up to the office, and I'm sitting there, and they, whoever your assistant was up front, hands me like a clipboard with like 40 pages of releases.
Yes.
I was like, what? And then I'm reading through this, and we have to contact your family, and we have to contact all your former girlfriends, and all, and then like. And I was
contact your former girlfriend.
No,
he was like, I'm out.
I mean, yeah, it was a big deal. I mean, it still is. I think it's shocking, but it's still on television. And the casting process for that show, for that role in particular, is quite layered.
Yeah, so this is, I want to get into like really, like let's dig deep into your career and philosophy. I would assume that philosophy and journalism really helped you with casting, with producing. You are an executive now, right?
Yes.
So how did that degree, even though you're not doing philosophy and journalism, you kind of are in storytelling. So how did that help you in the career that you've now, the path that you're now on?
I think the things that I studied and that I really focused in on in college, like journalism and philosophy, helped me become a, like I was saying earlier, the skills of studying were skills that I developed later in life.
In college,
right? So just the act of it, the practice of it, gave me a discipline, which definitely has helped in the professional world that I've moved within. Journalism, the foundation of journalism, people may argue with me now because pretty much anybody can be a journalist if they have like a social media profile.
Right.
But in the earlier days, it required that you understood the who, what, where, when, and how of a story.
Right.
So those five components, they translate to everything. And in video, you know, using video and or digital images, you just are building upon that who, what, when, where. Why? So who, what, when, where, and why.
Why.
Yeah.
You got them.
So thank you. So those principles are really drilled into your head. Also, something that I learned, like probably this would have been my first Journalism 101 class, something called agenda setting, which the media does by, you know, dictating kind of what the news of the day is and, you know, it's almost like setting the trend of thought amongst pop culture.
Right.
So that's also been a big part
of help.
Yeah, the work that I've done has been about like you brought up The Bachelor. I mean, The Bachelor, being part of The Bachelor for the first 10 seasons of it, definitely set the agenda for our pop culture because it's still present now.
Well, and it's the first show ever done like that. Like now you have all these other shows that really, you know, branched off from The Bachelor.
100%.
Yeah, so you were like on the cutting edge, you probably didn't even realize that. How many seasons are they into it now?
Like 21.
That's insane. That's insane.
Thank you for not trying to recruit me for a celebrity wife swap.
Oh, right. That was another. But that was a great idea. So I did work on Celebrity Wife Swap, but I also worked on Civilian Wife Swap.
And either one.
But Civilian to me was far more interesting because it was like this social experiment.
Yeah, social experiment.
Because we had, you know, families on opposite ends of a spectrum living together.
Admittedly, I watched some of
them. Some of the episodes were incredible.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about working in reality, especially in those early days of reality, the beginning of the 2000s, the aughts, the early aughts, like they call it, was that there was this social component to it and this this experimental thing, like putting people in these bizarre environments, whether it's, you know, a house with, you know, 24 other girls all dating the same guy, or suddenly having
sounds
this like
awful
for who, the girl or the guy? Girls or the guy?
Yeah. I never could have done that.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
my makeup could not have tolerated that
show. Well, that's why you didn't get it, probably.
and he also like was not that, like, you have to be really, to be a reality you know, candidate, you have to be open, and you have to, in my opinion, like, again, I've moved out of, I've hung up my casting crown, and I'm doing, you know, other work now. But in those years, one of the things that I found that makes a great reality star is somebody who processes their thinking outside their head.
So, if want that for game shows too. They want you, you know, as you're going through game shows and you're processing that. They want you to go, okay, well, that was spelled with, you know, they want you to process out loud.
Yes, yes.
And that kind of brings the audience in.
Yeah, totally.
So what are the things that you're doing now? So you were casting, you've had so many, as I was researching, I was like, wow, you have casted so many things. You have worked on so many things. What are you like now? You were former caster, director, producer, and executive. So what is, how?
And well, podcast producer, right?
Because I mean, that's actually one of the types of content.
You recruited me. Okay.
I didn't suck you in.
you recruited me to one of the podcasts that you were producing with Laura Wasser. Yes. Which was the very first, it was right before COVID hit, I believe.
Yes,
right?
Literally, like, I think it was March 1st or something. Yeah, like
weeks before.
Yeah.
And that was the very first podcast that I did. And I remember,
wow.
I remember doing it because
look at you now.
It was me and you and Laura, and we were talking.
Right.
And I was like, this is fun. Like, I had, like, the hour just flew by, right?
Yes.
And then, so, like, that was my first exposure to, like, it had never even occurred to me to go on a podcast, let alone have a podcast. And then this one sucked me into this podcast.
It's a great thing to do because of the conversational component of it. Also, I think at that particular podcast that you were a guest on, we were really focusing on this niche audience, which is, you know, interested in
divorces having surgery,
which is an audience, as you know. I mean, it's, you know,
plastic
surgeon. So I'm sure, like, we talked about the divorce makeover. We talked about refreshing your body and your parts of your body after a divorce. And I think to answer your earlier question, so when I, in like 2015, 16, when streaming services really became present and almost omnipresent.
Right.
I realized that obviously, you know, broadcast television was changing and cable television was changing. And I've always had a seeking mind and been interested in, like, expansion and doing different things. Kind of to your point about maybe that's like the LA DNA, is that we're, you know, have this desire to aspire to something new and greater and bigger. And, you know, so
creatively, also always.
100%. And so that's what then made me start to look for things outside of television. So the project that you're talking about, I went in, it ended up creating a new company. So I had On TV Inc., under which I did casting and producing of traditional content. And then I created a new company called Real Brand Inc., which was all about digital marketing and digital content production. Podcasts, new media, stuff online, that sort of thing. And one of the big projects that I had was launching an app with this incredibly famous divorce attorney, another longtime friend, Laura Wasser, who is like the A-list divorce attorney for any A-lister that you can think of, from, you know, Kim Kardashian, Angelina Jolie, to Dr. Dre. I mean, she does them all. So she has this very like high level, high end practice. But her philosophy is very accessible and relatable, and it's all about amicability. So we took her philosophy, we created an app that, you know, people who are not on the A list, but like even if you're on the Z list, you could afford to get divorced on an app, online, on your phone.
Wow.
Is it over quick or something?
It's over easy.
It's over easy. There you go. Great
That's
name.
Brilliant. Double entendre.
It was a great idea.
A very cheap way of getting divorced.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a brilliant idea. Well, you know, I mean,
don't tell Mike.
Yeah. Well, I gotta get Laura. Yeah. If I, you know,
the tricky thing about it, however, though, was timing. And I think the timing was not on our side because really, like right as you were saying,
right as it was hitting, the whole world shut down,
including the courts. So nobody could get divorced in 2020 and most of 2021 unless unless you could afford to hire a private judge. So you're back at the A-list who are not using It's Over Easy.
So, wow.
Oh yeah, that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. So we produced a ton of content around that message of amicability and separating without scorching the earth on either side. That's another thing that I learned through that work, is that there's a lot of emotion involved in relationships and divorce. And so it takes a very mature person to see the value of not scorching the earth.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so that then
because
opened...
Because the only ones that win are the lawyers.
Exactly.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it too many times with my friends and some family. And
It's not great, and it's not great for the kids. And
I mean, you know, my mom and dad divorced when I was three. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the process at all.
But you lived with the effects of it.
Lived with the effects of it, but now it's like... Now I'm at the age where, like, had so many friends going through it. And it's so rare that I have a couple friends who are like, okay, split it up 50-50, that's it, let's move on, go, take care. It's
so much nice. Better.
But I think that's the mature way of handling it.
Totally.
And the most cost-effective way of handling it. Because and then I have another friend dragged out for 3 years, you know, spends almost $1 million in legal fees.
Wiped out all of their cash. You can use that money to get rid of the wrinkles in your forehead.
Yeah.
For worrying and being angry. Like
new wardrobe.
Put it in a place that, you know,
it's useful.
Do you good. Yeah. 100%.
So, Johnny, what has been one of your favorite projects to work on?
Oh, the project that I'm doing now, I mean, a project is not even the right word. I'm so grateful to have been invited into Warner Brothers last summer to produce brand integrations for a new talk show, the Jennifer Hudson Show, which just was renewed for a second season.
I know. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. So this is my, like, I live it and breathe it. It's a really interesting role for me after having such, like, you know, my hand, like your hands are deep into production.
Right.
Now I have a more executive position. I'm kind of a bridge between the advertising agencies and the different brands that are involved with the show and production.
So brand executive and a show too, right?
Exactly. So I sit between the producers, like from the EPs all the way down to the PAs.
Right.
And then the you know, chief marketing officers of insert brand here. And so I'm kind of like I manage those relationships.
So is it for like product placement during the actual show or for commercials or?
It's within the show.
Like Jennifer Hudson comes out in like a Lululemon sweat, you know, shirt and you're like, look at my new Lululemon shirt.
I mean,
that kind of stuff.
Well, it's
more subtle.
Yes. A little.
He's a doctor.
She's not a fan of Lululemon.
Yes, in a sense, it's related to that, but it's been fascinating. So we just, you know, are at the tail end of our first season. We've produced 170 episodes.
Oh, wow.
Which is a lot of television. Yeah. And it's been.
And you don't also want to be a casting director at the same time? Why not? Two jobs.
Yeah, but that's also my rearview mirror. You know, I enjoyed casting. I enjoyed traveling the country and looking for people to do these different projects. But it also is a different time now. You know, reality television has changed from the social experiment to the formulaic in a lot of ways.
Yes.
What I love about talk, and actually, I'll just take you back. So
the show is fabulous.
She's
so good too.
And it's very modern. It's it's interesting because the demographic that we target is the current demographic. You know, it's the Gen Z and the millennials, and that their taste is very, you know, it's unique.
Right.
Just like we're Gen X, you know, our taste is unique to, you know, the other, right? So that's been quite interesting.
Yeah, and they're the future. You know, they're exactly. kind of changing programming, really.
Totally.
Just like with social media yeah. and, you know, TV. And yeah. it's so funny. Like, I'm also an actress mm-hmm. and writer, but
yes.
It's funny, like, people, it's hard now because if you are an influencer, all right. of a sudden you can be an actor, you know, you can, and so yeah. in a way it's a little, it's frustrating, but at the same time, I'm like, go with the flow because life is changing
right.
and the more you resist it, mm-hmm. then you're stuck, you're pigeonholed in this, like, thing that is passing you by.
Elizabeth, that is exactly the point, and that's to your question about, like, no, I'm not interested in being a casting director anymore. That's in the rearview mirror. You have to evolve and
yes.
grow, and I still want to be, like, I hear friends of ours or contemporaries of ours talking about retirement and, you know, winding down. And I'm like,
I would love to. No.
Yeah, but there's no retirement in my future, and maybe not in either of yours either. So
no.
we're just going to keep going, and you got to stay
relevant
and engaged.
Retirement? She just gave me a second job.
Right. You're now producing the show and hosting it. Yeah, exactly. There's no retirement.
Well, because you studied philosophy, I can totally relate to that, right? Because I was telling Dr. Brenner in the car, I'm like, my son,
yes.
that's his major.
Okay.
So who was your favorite philosopher and why? Like, what about that philosopher just really...
Yes. So my favorite, historical philosopher, or, like, you know, I would say is the Greek philosopher Heraclitus. Heraclitus was around, like, he's a pre-Socratic philosopher. So, you know,
what does that mean?
More than I ever knew about philosophy.
He was supposedly around before Socrates.
Oh, okay.
So this is, like, very early Greek history. And one of his theories is that everything is constantly in flux. Like, nothing is ever, like, solid. Everything is always moving and changing. And I wrote a paper about that in college in England, and that message has stayed with me because now, like, as, you know, adults, to say the least, we yeah. know that's true. Like, nothing is ever still. Everything is always moving, everything. But
young adults.
Yes.
Yes.
39. So Heraclitus would be my favorite philosopher of all time, or one of the most profound, let's say.
And it's something you carry with you.
To this day. Yeah, yeah. And then a modern philosopher who I've you know, studied the writings of in my sort of current life is a Japanese Buddhist philosopher named Daisaku Ikeda, who, again, he's prolific as a writer, actually, but he also talks about this... this, you know, change being a component of life, and this idea of cause and effect. So those messages are very similar. So I would say those are the two philosophers who've made the most profound impact.
Wow.
I loved philosophy. I was telling Elizabeth this morning, it was my very last semester at Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to take a philosophy class. Oh. And it was like, I think it was like philosophy, it was a science-based philosophy class about, like, philosophy of evolution. But it was fascinating.
Yeah.
In fact, the book that we read the whole semester is the only book that I kept from college.
Wow.
Called The Selfish Gene.
Okay. Okay. What was the premise?
It was about the philosophy of evolution.
I get it. Right. The selfish gene, because that's what makes us evolve, right?
Right. And so I was like, if I hadn't run out of credits to take, I probably would have I would have done more. Maybe I wouldn't have gone to med school. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, my son loves it.
Yeah.
Started as a business major, and then he was like, it's too hard to get into schools where everybody's business majors. Mm-hmm. He did philosophy, and now it's like his favorite thing.
It's amazing.
And he liked Greek philosophy, like the Greek philosophers.
And I always said, like, what do you do with a degree in philosophy? Now I know.
Well, I mean...
casting director and
Well,
producer.
No, I mean, philosophy helps you read people,
yeah,
too, in business.
Sure.
I really feel like my son takes philosophy because he says he really wants business at tech companies. But he's like, I'm learning
yes.
how I can also... speak to people to get the Relate. Results that you yeah. want. There's a lot. Philosophy can take like, you kind of like many, many places. Major. Yeah.
Plus, I would imagine from in your role as a top, you know, Beverly Hills plastic surgeon that you have to have, like, I can imagine philosophy plays a role in the work you do, because I know, yes, you do some cosmetic things, but you also, you know, work so diligently on healing people from the adverse effects of bad surgeries they've gotten from other doctors.
More psychology than philosophy, but I guess there's definitely a component of both.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally. Oh my God, you just got so deep, Johnny.
Oh my.
Beyond the OR.
Yes, no. Exactly.
Well, this is not supposed to be a show about plastic surgery.
You know? I didn't hear that.
You're like, now you're telling me. All right, so we're getting close to running out of time.
Yes.
You have.
Go ahead.
What?
I have more questions for Johnny.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So. Yes. Can you tell our listeners?
Scrap what I said.
Okay, yeah, we're not. Yeah. It's going to be a special two-parter.
Yeah. I would like for you to, even though you're not in casting anymore, it's invaluable to have somebody like you to give you notes.
Oh, thank
you.
So
what would you tell people that, whether it's actors or just
real people, right?
When they want to audition for reality shows, based that you've done a lot of reality casting, what are the gold nuggets that you can give them?
Yes.
This was going to be my question.
To audition.
See, you're rethinking The Bachelor, aren't you? Oh, but you're married now. Maybe something else we can find for you.
Daniel, kill me.
Yeah. No. I think that it's such an interesting question, Elizabeth and Dr. Brenner, because, like, in that question...
Dr. Brenner.
Well... You are a doctor. I mean,
I know, but you.
In that question, you kind of like sum up the world of how it's evolved from where it once was to where it is now. Like when I started working in reality, it was such a new thing that it wasn't even called reality. I mean, it was. It still hadn't formed, right?
Right.
And so the idea of...
Like Survivor was the only show on, right?
Bachelor, Survivor, there were a few others like that had like basically all emerged around 2000, 2001, 2002. So that's kind of when the crux of it happened. And The Bachelor started as like a real soap opera. Which is how...
Interesting.
Yeah. So myself and other people that I worked with at General Hospital, the daytime drama, and other soaps were pulled from the soap world into reality very early because the idea was a real soap opera. The real world another one.
So you were initially trying to cast soap actors?
No.
Kind of thing? Or no?
No.
You were just trying to kind of mimic that... role.
No. I'll give you the bullet point, very short version. So after journalism school, I had learned how to write.
Right.
So I always wanted to be, I wouldn't mind doing it now, but one of the things I wanted to do was become a writer.
Right.
So again, to make a long story short, I went to go intern at General Hospital for free. And got hired on, thankfully, after doing that into the writing team.
So you basically did go to medical school?
At General Hospital. Yes.
Wow, so that was your first gig.
Yeah,
So funny, we had Maurice Bernard on here last week.
Sonny Corinthos. He's incredible.
He is an incredible
actor, an incredible humanitarian also.
Activist.
Yes.
Changing the stuff on mental health.
The conversation about mental health. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's
stigmatizing them.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, you know, a young Sonny then. Now he's like become the Luke Spencer of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
But
and now you're talking with names that I just can't register. I'm not a soap opera.
Oh, I it
registers. You were General Hospital.
Luke and Laura, like, were on the cover of Time magazine.
Hello?
Like, there was a huge thing.
I'm not
thing.
Saying that it's not a big thing.
He was at med school.
Right. You were busy.
But maybe I had a little Days of Our Lives back in college.
Okay.
That was about it. That's when we had you know, VCRs.
Yes, yes. It was a different world. So back to your question, it was such a different world.
I digress. I'm sorry.
No. There's a circle there because it like the idea of what are some pointers to get on a reality show or to be cast on, like,
right.
That was not even an idea in the early, like, when I was working in reality, right? Then over time, as I, you know, moved through my career in reality, like, that became more the thing. And we started looking for people that were able to deliver on camera. And that's really getting to the answer of your question. So for an actor, I really don't recommend trying to, you know, go the reality route. I know that it can become, for some people, like a you know, path or bridge into more traditional content. But I think that reality is best when it focuses on people who are genuinely, authentically, whatever that is.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
Wouldn't you get pigeonholed as a reality kind of person versus being...
You could.
Scripted actor.
You certainly could.
Even though a lot of it's now scripted, right?
Right. I mean, well, it's structured, yeah. So there's a difference. There's totally a difference. But yeah, you're right. And I think also the nice... What I love about scripted work is that it's, you know, it's taking on a persona or it's imagining, it's interpreting dialogue or being directed in a certain way. So... pointer for an actor that I, you know, and again, my lane has been more in the unscripted space, but I've worked in the scripted space. What I would say to an actor is almost the same thing I'd say to a real person, is being authentic. So looking for the authentic resonance in the material, and then whether that's being an actor, portraying a role and absorbing the character in that way, or it's, you know, a show about a plastic surgeon and his practice and what goes on in that practice, like, be that, be authentic. Don't try to be something else. That's, I guess, one of the pointers I'd give.
And in the branding role that you're in and now executive at Jennifer Hudson, what was the biggest switch for you, mm-hmm. that you had to, mm-hmm. maybe switch coming from casting and producing, mm-hmm. to now an executive?
Yes.
Like, how has that changed?
Do you have to wear a suit now?
I don't know. I have to wear a suit. I mean, that's the nice thing about being in LA and being at a studio. Like, it's still like you can dress like the lovely Elizabeth and like all black. And like, as long as you own your look, you can pretty much get away with whatever you want.
I always picture executives in suits. Like I picture David coming.
David is a sharp dresser.
He always has.
Yeah, he's a very sharp dresser.
But like he wears a suit every day, doesn't he?
A lot of the times, you know, but.
But that's probably his personality.
David's one of the forefront. He's an executive at Telepictures, right?
Yeah, which is under Warner Brothers, right. So I see him quite a bit. Right. You had asked about...
How is your job now different?
Oh, right,
as
right, right,
far
right,
as,
right.
Like, how was that change for you? Mm-hmm. How did that all meld into where you're at now? And it seems like you're thriving and you just absolutely love it. And I'm sure you loved all the jobs you've
had.
But, you know, like you say... Everything is an evolution, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. How has that evolved for you?
Most of my career, I've been an entrepreneur, even though as a producer, but I've had to, like, create my own companies. I've had to hire and you know, expand and contract based on the projects. And so I have become, like, a one-man show, a one-man band.
Right.
And having to edit, cast, produce, direct, shoot a podcast, record a podcast, do audio, like all of the things one, you know, has to become able to do.
Spinning many plates.
Yeah.
A jack of all trades.
Or Jacqueline.
Yeah.
Elizabeth does a lot of that too.
I know.
Yeah.
Can sense that.
Yeah.
And I guess in a lot of roles it's like that, but the difference now that I'm working within this big organization that's, you know, has 100 years of history, you know, making content. There are union rules and a job for this and a person who does that and a person who does this. And
oh, that's so nice.
It's interesting. Like, that's what you're asking, like, what's the biggest change? Like, getting used to that idea of, like, not doing everything yourself or, like...
Is that challenging? Because that's kind of challenging for me.
Yeah.
Because I think there comes a, when you've produced and cast and all that, mm-hmm. there's a certain control that you have.
Yes.
And I would assume that in this position that you are, that control is limited to exactly what you're doing.
Which is to manage relationships.
Right.
And so that is requires a lot of, like, you know,
philosophy
and psychology.
Yes.
And personality and all the things, you know. So
I'm sure personalities, that's like probably the hardest one because so many, you know, you never know what you're going to get sometimes.
But again, like,
but for all of us, I mean,
for all of us,
even
yeah.
for me, I mean, I was,
for sure.
You know, I spent a lot of time learning medicine. Learning surgery, mm-hmm. doing residency, mm-hmm. learning operations, knowing how to do it, how to manage patients, yes. from a medical standpoint. No one ever teaches you how to run a business, how to hire and fire employees, mm-hmm. how to mm-hmm. interface with patients.
Right.
Both, you know, when they're happy and when they're not happy.
Right.
You know, so that's the hardest part of the job. It's not the technical portion of it.
But for you, in your role, there is also this life and death component to the work you do, which in the work I do, people think there's a life and death, but it's not the same.
I gotta have my Jennifer Hudson.
Right, right. It's not the same. So being able, for you to be able to put people at ease and make them feel comfortable, like that's your superpower, I think, as a doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Superpower.
You have a superpower.
I could be an X-Man.
There you go.
Oh.
So this was the question I was going to ask you, but I was a little jumped the gun, I guess.
Hey, right. Jesus.
So I always like to ask people, because
yes.
I ask myself, if you weren't in entertainment, if you hadn't picked the trajectory of what you did,
yes.
casting, podcasts,
yes.
producing, what would you have done with your life? Or what would you have wanted to do with your life?
Hmm. You know, I've always wanted to be a lawyer.
Really?
I always thought that I would be, you know, good at that.
What kind?
I don't know. I just...
Like a litigator?
You know, the thing is, the reason I say that is really not about the actual, like, job of a lawyer. The thing that is challenging when you are a creative, like, artistic person who's good at, you know, making content is that... The world of doing that is up and down, and the stability of being a doctor or being a lawyer or being a whatever that just has, like, you know, a stable component to it has always been like a fantasy of mine, to have that kind of life. So I think that's what I would do. I would have done something like work at a bank or be a lawyer or, you know, something that
work
just...
at a bank?
I don't know. Something that's like 9 to 5. Go to work Monday through Friday and it's year...
Holidays are off.
Right.
You're off on holidays.
Being a lawyer is not 9 to 5.
Well, for some it is. Some for it's like 9 to 10 and then they're done. Like, you know, who? When you get paid like $1,000 an hour.
I don't know anyone who does that.
Mm.
And then you go work out for the rest of the day.
Right, yeah.
Or go to Air One and get
That's
a smoothie.
That's the thing in this town especially.
Well, all Johnny, right.
Yes.
I want to say that of all the things that you've done, the thing that I'm most impressed with is that you can do a cartwheel in roller skates.
Thank you. You know,
and that is a yeah. true fact.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes, it is.
I saw
it
you
is.
In your... I
still,
love roller skating.
Still today?
Skating.
Yeah, to this day.
Come on.
I mean, my last performance was a few years ago. So but, you know, if push came to shove.
That's amazing.
I love roller
I didn't know that
skating.
About you. How did you find this out?
Oh, this is what a good producer does.
She digs. That's amazing. This you're going to have to show me.
So
we won't air it.
Yeah,
we
didn't bring my skates.
We won't air it. But
I'll bring mine.
You're going to have Michael film you doing this.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll talk about it.
No?
Depends.
Let me put it on Instagram. That's amazing. I did not know that. I see. Now... And I'm like a baby giraffe if I was on roller
skates. When was the last time you were on skates?
Probably in high school.
Okay. Yeah. Well.
And now I got too many injuries, like my back, my calf, my knee. I'm like an old
hip.
Old hip.
He's
yeah.
like Rosanna Danny.
Yeah. Roller skating is a great exercise. And it's easier than you.
It's great exercise. Yeah, I used to roller skate in the tennis court.
Okay.
Yeah. So don't know how to play tennis, but.
So the last and most important follow-up question to that is. Yes. Inline skates or
roller skates
from the 80s.
Yeah,
I mean, okay. Yeah,
you're probably the same pair.
The same pair from eighth grade from Flippers down on Santa Monica.
Well, Johnny,
yes,
it's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you
always,
so much.
I always love seeing you.
Likewise,
Elizabeth. I told Elizabeth, I said, we have to have Johnny on because he's just...
I'm honored.
I know, I hunted him down.
I have so much fun talking to you every time I see you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
I now know things that in 40 years I haven't been able to figure out.
Well, thank you for having me. It's
thank you so
much. Great
conversation.
Yeah. I appreciate all your questions. And wishing you guys lots of luck with this show.
And we won't direct anyone to your social media because you're behind the scenes. You know, you don't want anyone to know who you are.
Social media is not exciting.
But I mean, do you want to? I say promote your social media. I'm all about promoting social media.
Sure.
So there's your camera right there. Could you tell everybody where they can find you?
People can find me at Johnny Rains Official on Instagram.
Awesome.
That's amazing.
Thank you again.
Won't be too exciting, but I'll be there.
That's nonsense. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Awesome.
Thanks for watching Beyond the OR with our guest, Johnny Rains. Make sure to like, follow, and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the OR with Dr. Brenner. Make sure to subscribe, like, and follow so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, hit me up on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Kevin Brenner MD and KevinBrennerMD.com.